episode 2. Welcome back to the podcast if you're a returning listener. If you're new to the channel, fucking welcome. Before we get into the episode, I want to talk just about the first episode and the response that it had. First and foremost, the amount of people that have messaged me that I've either known for years and had no idea they'd gone through anything to do with mental health, or I barely know at all, but you know, they've told me about their experience. Like, it's just been a massive, massive wake-up call, and it's just made me realise, well, really, how much of a great mask people can put on, and you would never, ever assume that they have gone through, you know, anything to do with, like, anxiety, depression, PTSD, things like that. And it's just made me realise, you know, we really are just all in the same boat, to be honest with you. And it's just reiterated for me how much we all need something like this. So in addition to that, the response that the first episode has received, just, you know, everyone sharing it, telling other people about it, it's just, I can't even find the words to describe it. I guess, like, overwhelming, but like in a good sense. And it's just made me appreciate just how many sound people I've got in my life, to be honest with you. So thank you for the love. Thank you for the support. And I know I keep saying it, but I just hope that you get some value from the episodes that are to come, to be honest with you. And it's, you know, it's already, to me, it's got that like community feel to it. And that's what I want it to be. Again, I've said it before, but this isn't about me. It's about all of us just trying to figure it out, to be honest with you. And I feel like so far, the response that it's received has been a good indication that that's something that we're heading towards. So yeah, episode 2. Really, really good episode. I think if you liked the first episode, you're going to absolutely love this one. I had David on, who's a meditation teacher, and we had some pretty in-depth discussions, man, about the benefits of meditation, what meditation really is, and just how it can help with, you know, sort of mental health and any setbacks that you might be having as a result of mental health. So it's a very value-packed episode. Grab a tea, grab a coffee, grab a beer. If you're driving, maybe don't have a beer in your hand, but sit back, relax for the next 50 minutes and just absorb everything that this man has to say, because he dropped some really, really good knowledge throughout the episode. And I feel like if we can all maybe take a little bit of that and try and embody it into our own lives, then, you know, we might start making just a little bit of progress when it comes to, you know, trying to deal with any setbacks that we might face. So, yeah, let's crack on. Right. So, welcome to the podcast, man. Welcome to Unbottled.
Thank you very much.
The first guest that we've got on here. So, safe to say that you'll be in the Unbottled Hall of Fame, mate. But I appreciate you coming on, man. We first touched base a couple of months ago, didn't we?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Back in the November, start of December, when I was really still trying to figure all this out. So I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my, I'm delighted to.
Sweet, man. So I thought the best way to kick off would really be for you to just give, you know, me a bit of a background and the listeners on sort of your story and your journey on what's brought you up until this moment in your life where, you know, you're now a meditation teacher.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, my story, my experience probably will resonate with a lot of your listeners. It's been a story of mental health, you know, so I've always been interested in the mind and mental health. Growing up, I was always quite depressive by nature. I always had low mood, always had low energy. And it got in the way of my studies, got in the way of, you know, getting ahead, personal life, friends and everything else. So I always found it quite interesting. You know, why do I have low mood? Why do I have anxious thoughts? Especially when outwardly everything was okay. I didn't really have, you know, a terrible life. You know, I had a good upbringing. School was okay. So there was no real reason for it. So I was always quite interested in why that was happening. And mental health problems were quite common in my family. So yeah, it's something we've all sort of dealt with. So knowing that I had that, my family had that, other people had that, I just wanted to help people. I didn't like the fact that there was people out there experiencing mental health problems. And so I just wanted to do what I could to learn about it and help. And growing up, in the West. Obviously, when you think of mental health problems or diseases, you think of medicine and science. So I thought of psychiatry. I thought, well, I'll become a doctor, I'll become a psychiatrist, then I'll be able to help people. And I did my interviews at university and I didn't get in. So then I thought, well, maybe I'll try again later and I'll just go get some experience in a mental health hospital doing support work, mental health nursing. And in the end, I spent 3 years in different hospitals, different community settings. And what I found was there was loads of great work being done for people with severe mental illness, psychotic disorders, bipolar disorders, and so on. But there was a huge amount of people in the system with low to moderate depression, anxiety, low mood, attentional problems. And these symptoms they were getting were either triggered by, they were either caused by, or at least exacerbated by stress. Stress at home, stress in the workplace, things going wrong, life hitting them in the face as it does, you know, sickness, death, financial trouble. And there was a huge number of these people who were struggling with life and they were being given pharmaceuticals and not so much else. So there was a lot of suppressing the symptoms of the low mood, anxious thoughts, nervousness and everything, but not actually getting to the root cause, the underlying condition. And that's not to say medication doesn't play a vital role. You know, I'd never say that, not at all. Yeah. For many, it's a lifeline. For many, it's necessary to help with very severe symptoms. But one thing that I came to recognize, and you know, we have to be clear, is that it's not a cure, right? It's paracetamol for a broken bone. It's painkiller. It eases the pain, but it doesn't heal the broken bone. So there was a lot of people in and out doing okay when life was okay, but coming back again and again. And the staff were cynical and I kind of lost hope. I thought, are we really helping these people? And so I kind of grew a bit despondent. My own depression caught up with me. Life was really quite challenging at the time. We'd had several deaths. My dad had a heart attack. My mom was having a breakdown. The news was all death, destruction, famine, war. Social media was social media. And so it was overwhelming. It was just all around me. And I thought, well, if this is what life is, if this is what I've got for the rest of my life, I don't think I want to participate. You know, I thought I want out. And so I started thinking, you know, what's going to be the easiest, quickest, most painless way to just get out of this. And at some point in my desperation, I Googled something like, why is life suffering? And what came up was an article on Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha's first teaching. And the first of the Four Noble Truths was, in life, there is suffering. And I was like, here's somebody actually just saying the words. Everybody else I felt like was just trying to pretend like it wasn't a big thing. I was trying to just downplay mental health and everything else. And then here it was, just somebody saying, in life, there is suffering. And I just started reading loads about Buddhism and meditation. It all made a lot of sense to me. I went to a Buddhist center. And I grew up an atheist and I thought religion is just, you know, I thought they're all the same. But I went and everybody was normal and everybody was kind and they were all practical and everybody was just asking the real questions. Why do I get stressed? Why do I have anxiety? Why do I have depression? What can I do about it? And instead of looking at pharmaceuticals or looking at the brain or something else, they were actually just looking directly at the mind, looking at those thoughts that cause us so much problems, and saying, why does it work like this and what can we do? And yeah, so I spent some years at this Buddhist center in Liverpool. I was asked to teach eventually. And yeah, I've been teaching meditation. I first started teaching meditation in mental health setting in 2015, and then in a Buddhist setting in 2017. And yeah, I've done some retreat and I've just noticed a massive change in myself. You know, I'm a more positive, peaceful person. I've managed to overcome my low mood. It's not that it doesn't come back, but I know what to do with it and it doesn't cripple me and it doesn't own me anymore. So yeah, that's a long-winded way of what's my story.
Yeah, no, brilliant, mate. Definitely a couple of points I want to pick up on. In the meantime, I'm going to go and swap my headphones because there were like 1 or 2 seconds here and there where you just like went out a little bit. So I'll literally be 30 seconds. All right.
How's that?
Amazing. Better? There we go. Yeah.
More in sync.
Good. Think it's about time I actually brought some real AirPods maybe, mate. I don't think the knockoff ones from China are doing me any favours.
I've got fake ones as well, to be honest.
Oh, fair. You'll have to send me a link from them, mate, because the ones that I've got are definitely not working. But something that you said in your backstory as well, I'm just going to find the quote because I wrote it down the other day.
Yeah.
So I was in London a few weeks ago. I took mum down there to go and see the Harry Potter play.
Oh yeah.
And there was a quote that was said by Dumbledore in that play at the time, and I was like, I've got to write this down because it just resonated with me so well. And he goes, to suffer is as human as to breathe. And that really struck a chord with me, you know, because it's true. Suffering is just part of this experience called life that we go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I thought it'd be worth sharing that with you and people listening anyway, because I felt that, I don't know, parts of your backstory just fit very well with that quote.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really well said and quite succinctly, because it is. And I think part of the problem and part of the reason that we struggle so much actually with life is the fact that we want it to be different. We don't think that we should have problems. We don't think that we should sometimes suffer or, you know, sometimes have issues in life. And we reject it so much and we push against it. And that just makes it worse. That's what creates the stress and the tension is we want life to be different. So yeah, I think coming to terms with that, that's, you know, the reason the Buddha said it was to know that first noble truth. And then you can have a bit more peace once you finally just accept it, okay, that is the way that life is, and let go of the why me, why should I have to, why, you know, it can just get a bit easier. And then you can sort of practically deal with whatever that, you know, that challenge is at the time without so much of the extra baggage that we just bring on top.
Yeah, definitely. That leads quite nicely onto a quote that I want to ask you about a little bit further into the show as well. So really, I thought it'd be nice to sort of clearly define for the people listening, like, what meditation is, because I feel like people might be looking at the title of this and thinking, what meditation? You know, you need to be a Buddhist monk in the mountains with your head shaved and a robe on. And they're the only people that meditate, you know? So yeah, if you could kind of just give your definition of what meditation is.
Yeah, sure. I think it can be described in a lot of different ways, and it depends who you ask. But one way, just very simply, it's a practice of being aware. It's a practice of focusing our awareness on a particular thing, particular object, which could be anything. Could be our breath, could be sounds, could be a pebble or a stick, could be a thought, could be a mental state. In Buddhism, we find two main types of meditation. And one is where we just focus our awareness on the object and hold it there. So that could be focusing on the sensations of the breath, or just looking at a stick, or listening to some sounds and just holding our attention there. That's called shamatha, or tranquility meditation. And then the second type is called vipassana, or insight meditation. And that entails some inquiry. So we're not just directing our awareness to something like the breath or the body or our thoughts, but we're trying to look closely at, where does it come from? There's some investigation. How do thoughts work? Where do they come from? And so on. So we see these sort of two broad categories. Now, as you just said, you know, meditation is not just about sitting on a cushion, cross-legged, looking all zen in the, you know, the middle of a wooden floor or in a cave or something.
Yeah.
It's not about that. And just to give two sort of historic words that we now translate into meditation, the first one is bhavana, and it's a Pali word. And bhavana literally means cultivate. And they use that word in the same way to cultivate a farm, cultivate, you know, other things. It's called citta bhavana, mind cultivation. And what it's about is just cultivating the mind in patience, in loving kindness, in calm, in, you know, whatever it is you want to cultivate it in. And then gom is the Tibetan word for meditation, and that means to familiarize. And so it means to, you know, familiarize the mind with those mind states, the states that we want. And so any time that we're cultivating or training the mind is meditation. So let's say we have an influx of unhelpful thoughts. We're beating ourselves up, or we're going over how angry we are at someone or something. If that's happening and we instead bring our attention to our breathing, or we direct our mind to something else like gratitude or love for others or patience, then we're training our mind in new habits. We're training our mind in new responses. We're cultivating the mind. That is meditation. So meditation isn't just this sort of sitting down for 10 specific minutes, but it's any time that we're just looking after the mind, trying to cultivate it, make it more calm, make it more relaxed, bring it under control. So that's what it is. But then the second part of that is, why do we do it? And shamatha, or tranquility meditation, that's about training our attention. This, you know, for example, just focusing on the breath, that's about cultivating a very calm, focused, healthy, balanced mind. And it brings about a sense of peace, inner calm, because our mind gets to, just for the moment, let go of all the stress and tension that we're holding, let go of any anxious thoughts that we're holding. And it brings a sense of well-being, brings a sense of inner joy, even though we're just focusing on the breath, not doing anything interesting. Mm-hmm. It's yep. just really enjoyable. And it starts to become balance. And with that, we become better equipped to handle unhappy thoughts and difficult things that happen in life. And then the insight meditation, that's about getting deeper wisdom. And so it's, what is this mind that drives me crazy? How do these pesky thoughts work? Can I actually control these thoughts? What happens to a thought if you don't think it? You know, and all these sort of things, really just getting to know what is all this stuff. So meditation is about calming the mind, letting go of stress, relaxing, but it's also so much more. It's about cultivating that new approach to life. It's about looking after our mind, finding balance, and finding that we can maintain calm and clarity even when things go wrong. Mm. And then the last point I want to make there is that everybody can meditate. It doesn't need to be so difficult. We don't need to run away to the caves to meditate. We don't need to make it a big thing. I can't meditate because I'm not on my cushion at home. You know, you can do it in the car. You could do it anywhere. So in a nutshell, that's meditation.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And just to build on that from personal experience, so I'm someone that uses, you know, I've used a guided meditation app. Admittedly, I haven't built too much of a habit out of it over the years. I tend to sort of dip in and out. But I find that, just building on what you said, like the real work comes from, you know, it's not just that 10 minute time window where you sat down in the morning and you meditate. The real work comes from actually embodying how you pay attention to the breath within that 10 minute window throughout the rest of your day, which took me a while to get to start with, because I'd just sort of sit down and I'd be like, right, this is my 10 minutes of meditation, and then I'll just wait until tomorrow morning for the next 10 minutes of meditation. But it runs a lot deeper than that, doesn't it? It's like, you know, it's, how can I pick moments of my day where maybe I'm getting a bit too caught up, a bit too, you know, entangled in thoughts. And I feel like that's where the real work is done with meditation, embodying it throughout your sort of day-to-day life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And I think there's a quote that I heard once of, you know, we don't meditate to get good at meditation, but we meditate to get good at life. If it's not for helping you in day-to-day life, then what is it for? There's two ways that it helps us. The first is that if we do have a regular practice of 10, 15 minutes, and we do that regularly, we do notice that when things go wrong and when shit hits the fan, we are actually able to remain a bit more calm. We have a bit more presence and we have a bit more control over the mind. So we notice that there is actually an effect there. And then the second way, exactly like you said, is sprinkling mindfulness and awareness into the rest of our day, and not just letting it be something that we do on the cushion and then, you know, kick the cat and scream in traffic the moment that we finish our meditation, but actually bringing it into our daily life. And that's how it changes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that kind of brings me on to my next point for you, really, is like, how do you think meditation helps anxiety, worry, and stress?
Yeah. Really good question. And I think partly it's about gaining control of this monkey mind that we have, which unfortunately is common for a lot of us. So in Buddhism, we call this monkey mind. It's this mind that is sort of jumping around from one branch to another, so that the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, the mind is just wherever it wants to be. Something good happens and we're up and we're excited and we're on top of the moon, and then something bad happens and then we're down in the dumps and we're grasping onto that event, and where there's tons of sort of stories and everything else coming with it. And so we're jumping around with the mind, following after the mind. And so we're slaves to our mind. We're not really ever present with what's actually happening, but we're worrying about the future. You know, that's one of the characteristics of anxiety, is just this overthinking of what could happen, catastrophizing what could happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it you know, never turns out the way we think it will. But we're worrying about the future. We're going over issues of the past. And so if we're not in control of the mind and it's running the show, then we have no choice, right? Mm-hmm, we'll experience jealousy, we'll experience frustration, we'll experience all of these mental distresses. And the thing is we would like not to, right? You know, if I asked you if you had a priority, How would you like to feel today? Would you prefer to have a relaxed, fun day and a calm mind, or a stressed, anxious one?
I don't think anxiety would be top of the list, to be honest, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So we have a priority, but then why do we experience all of the opposite? Not all of the time, but a good deal of the time. And it's an interesting question.
Mm.
And then our ordinary answer is, well, it's because of my manager, or it's because of public transport, it's because of this person or politics and this and that. If I didn't have to deal with these things, then I'd be good. I'd be fine. Mm-hmm, let's just get rid of that person and sort out that. And the Buddhist answer is that your mind is uncontrolled, that the true causes of mental distress are not actually outside of yourself. Those are triggers. Your manager could be a trigger of stress, but they're not the cause of stress or anxiety from their own side. Traffic isn't the cause of stress from its own side. If it was, everybody would react the same.
Mm.
But we don't. So it's more about what happens internally in our mind. It's more about our bad habits of mind. It's about our way of grasping on to the things that happen. So, for example, this traffic situation, the reason that's so difficult and can give us stress and anxiety is not because we're there in the car. It's because we go, well, why am I in traffic? I shouldn't be here. I should be where I'm supposed to be. Whose fault is this? Who moved my keys earlier? Or if I'd have left earlier, or if this had happened, that had happened. If I'm going to be late, I'm going to, this person's going to think bad of me. I'm going to get fired. I'm going to be out on the street. I'm going to be... these are the reasons that we're struggling, right? Not the actual traffic. The traffic didn't do that to you. It didn't put those thoughts in there. The mind ran away with it. This is the monkey mind swinging in the trees, grabbed on, ran away with it, and we had no choice but to follow after it. And so this is what I think meditation can do for anxiety, especially. But depression and other mental health conditions, is it's about gaining control over time. It's not an overnight fix. It's not like a 10-minute meditation and you're done.
Absolutely.
But it's about slowly no longer being a slave of your mind, but a master of your mind. And it takes time and it takes training, but it's absolutely something we can do.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And that actually, I was going to bring up a quote with you, and I think you've just explained it perfectly, to be honest with you. I was going to ask, how does meditation allow you to embody the quote, life isn't about what happens to you, it's about how you react to what happens to you. But I think you've just articulated it perfectly, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just to elaborate on that point, that's what meditation and a closer investigation of our mind shows us, because it's no good somebody just telling us that fact. We need to know it for ourselves, right? And so with meditation, closer inspection, we start to see how our unhappy mental states arise. We see the connections and the processes, because we actually think that when I become angry with someone or stressed, that it's just like something happens, like traffic or your washing machine breaks, and then there's like instant anger. We just think there's two steps to the process: situation, reaction. But what happens, there's so much more in that process. And meditation helps us become very aware of what goes on in our mind and very aware of that process. And then there's a quote that I really like from Viktor Frankl, who's a Holocaust survivor. And he said that between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is the power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So with awareness,
that's gold.
We get to cultivate the ability to pause, the ability to grab hold of that space and use it, a space that we don't normally know is there.
And I guess, as you say, like chipping away over time, gradually 10 minutes every single day, allowing it to have that compounding effect, allows you to access that space, you know, sooner and sooner and sooner, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. And just, you know, from people who have come along to some of my classes, just within, you know, let's say they come along to a once a week, 5 week course. I've had people come back on the second week and third week and say, I've just been doing a small practice, 10 minutes, and I've really noticed that I'm not amazing, I'm not this, I'm not that, but something happened and I was able to bite my tongue. I was able to hold for a second. I still shouted in the end. I still had no control, but I noticed there was a pause and I was able to stop for a second. And just getting to know that that's even there is amazing. And we, you know, and the fact that we can use that to change the response and change, you know, how that situation is going to play out, is just, transformative.
Exactly. And then you look at, you know, 6 months down the line for that individual, you know, the progress would just be insane. But it's kind of like the way, just building on what you've said again, like the way that I try and explain like meditation to like my friends and people I just might be talking about mental health to, is like, so imagine being in a room and there's a cloud of anxiety, and you're like, that cloud of anxiety is just surrounding you. You're completely enveloped in this cloud. What I find is when I'm meditating consistently, and particularly inside that sort of 10 to 15 minute window when I'm meditating, you can become the person who is looking into that room from the outside through a window. And it's, you say, okay, there's the cloud of anxiety. I'm aware that it's there, but I don't have to buy into it, and it's not going to have that grip on me and completely take over my mind. And it's amazing when you first actually feel that, when if you've been suffering with anxiety for, you know, a fair few years, and you first actually have that feeling, it's like, wow, like you, because you can't even like conceptualize that ever happening in your mind when you're so deep mm-hmm. in it. And then it happens for the first time and you're like, what the hell? I need more of this, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing. It is.
I recognize that experience myself. I always used to describe my depression as similar in a way, a cloud that felt heavy on my shoulders. It felt weighted. I felt like I was, you know, being pushed down. And one of the things that you realize in meditation, like you just described, is that these thoughts or this experience actually, although it feels very heavy and very big and very powerful, a thought doesn't have a shape or a size or a color.
Mm-hmm.
Neither does the mind. Mm-hmm. They're formless. They don't have these things. And we do have a way of identifying with what happens in the mind, like you said. And in meditation, you do get a chance to sit outside of it and see that it's not you. And even just in our way of speaking, we say, I'm worried. That's, I am worry. You know, I'm anxious. You're not saying, oh, a worried thought is in my mind, or there's anxiety arising at the moment. We are completely enveloping ourselves in it, and we're saying, I am this thing. And then it's so difficult to deal with. And like you said, meditation gives us that space to just separate me from the experience right now. I'm not my anxious thought. I'm not my worried thought. I'm not my stress. These are arising right now. They don't have shape. They don't have size. They don't have color, and they will pass. I am not these things. And that's, like you said, it's just so powerful to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting thing that you just said then that I want to ask you about. What, because I know I do this myself, and sometimes I pick up on it and sometimes I don't, but labeling it as like my anxiety, like, do you think that has a subconscious effect on the way that you perceive anxiety, rather than saying anxiety has arisen in my mind? Like, by labeling it as your own thing and being like, well, this is me, this is part of me, like, do you think that, yeah, that has an effect on the way that you perceive anxiety in your own mind?
Absolutely. And it has a profound effect on the way that it controls you. Mm. For as long as you think that, you know, so long as you identify with it and you are that, then there's no way of separating. Mm. And you are experiencing that. But what so many people say when they think about it in that different way, or a lot of people like to label it something. So you can call it Billy, and you say, oh, Billy's here. Billy's causing me some problems, or he's, I hope there's nobody called Billy listening. You know, so you could label it.
Sorry, Billy, if you are listening.
So you can label it something. And just that way of separating gives you a bit of breathing space and gives you a bit of control, gives you a bit of ability to say, actually, no, I'm not going to listen to Billy today. I'm not going to listen to him right now, because I know that what he's got to say isn't actually very meaningful, wise, or truthful. We have this habit of believing absolutely everything that comes up in our mind. It's true. It's real. It's meaningful. When thoughts are actually quite pesky, and thoughts are actually not always to be trusted. And yeah, this way of just sort of separating yourself, it does give you that space to then be able to control it.
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I wanted to ask you, kind of, you know, we've covered quite in depth sort of the profound benefits of doing meditation on a consistent basis. To the person that's listening to this right now, okay, they understand what meditation is. They understand, as we said, you don't need to go off to the caves in the mountain and meditate there. You know, 101, how do they get started after listening to this?
Yeah. So the first thing is that meditation doesn't have to be anything complicated. So you don't need to go and find a quiet spot and everything else, although that does help. And if you want to build a consistent practice, that is good. But if you're struggling to even get to that point and you're putting it off because you think you don't have the right space, right, everything else, then perhaps just after listening to this podcast, once we're done talking, before you do anything else, just take a moment to sit still. You don't have to do anything special with your body. Just sit exactly where you were and listen to what sounds are around you, whether it's nature, other people, vehicles, or you can just feel that gentle rise and fall as you breathe in and breathe out. And as you do that, thoughts are bound to come up, and that's okay. That's natural. Some might be boring. Some might be fun. Some might be unpleasant. But just let yourself come back to whatever object it is, listening to the sounds around you or feeling your breath. And just give yourself permission to just stop for a minute. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Give yourself permission to just be there. And you might find that there's a quiet calm and a joy in giving yourself the time to just be still, attentive to the sounds around you or the breath. Even just a few minutes is better than none. Even just 30 seconds is better than none. I often teach people to when they're first starting their practice, to meditate and count 7 breaths, and that's it. Once you can do 7 breaths consistently, move it up to 14 breaths. So just make it simple again. If it's gotten complicated or it feels too overwhelming, make it simple again. Just sit there for a couple of minutes. Perhaps before you press the button on Netflix, stop for a minute and just give yourself 30 seconds to be quiet. Waiting for the kettle, don't take your phone with you. Turn it off. Just wait for it to boil on its own while focusing on your breath, or even just looking at the kettle. Make it simple if that's where you need to start. And then, of course, use apps, use guided meditations. People are welcome to check out my podcast. I have short 15, 20 minute guided meditations on there. Insight Timer is a really great app that I often recommend. There's so much content on there. Don't feel like you have to do it on your own if you don't want to. Guided meditations, you know, it's just as good when we're starting out. So yeah, simplify it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think just building on a point that you made there, you know, because without a doubt, anyone who's attempted meditation for the first time will experience, you know, maybe 4 breaths in, boom, I need to go and put the dishwasher on, or I need to go and do whatever the task is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think what's important, and I get caught up in doing this as well when I meditate sometimes, is feeling a sense of, I don't know, like a bit of anger. Like, I shouldn't be feeling that thought, because I'm trying to meditate, and like, I'm doing it wrong. This shouldn't be happening and stuff. So I think doing your best to not attach that emotion onto it, if you do experience just a random thought, because it's just part of training your brain, I guess, isn't it? Because without that thought arising and then you coming back to the center of attention, you wouldn't be able to build those neural pathways over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no point fighting it. People often, when they first start their practice, when those thoughts come up, like you described, you get more tense at it. You sort of clamp down more and say, no, I will focus. I will do this meditation thing. And that makes it worse. That's actually the thing we shouldn't do. We actually need to come with a sense of relaxation. When you're distracted, it's a sign that you need to relax more, that you're actually still tense, you're still agitated. So our response should be one that's first of all recognizing that it's natural. It's not something we're doing wrong, but it's going to happen, and that's completely fine. And also, whatever it is, you know, whether it's getting lost in a sound or an angry emotion or anything, it's all normal. If it's happening, it's normal. And then we just relax a bit more, perhaps into the out breath, and just gently guide our attention back, just like teaching a toddler to walk. You don't start shaking them when they fall over and say, why can't you just walk? You're patient with them, right? You understand it's going to take some time. So in the same way, you just need to be patient with yourself and just keep guiding yourself back in a very kind manner, not pushing. And also watch your expectations before you go into practice and during practice. We expect something nice to happen. I'm going to go into this practice and feel all serene and calm. And then we're like either waiting for it, like, where's the calm? When's it going to happen? Which just ruins the whole practice, because we're just thinking about that. Or we come out of it and go, well, that was no good. There was no calm. So don't, you know, be careful of your expectations. The Dalai Lama once said to my teacher before he went on a retreat, expectation is the foundation of failure.
Cool. That's gold, mate.
Which is a powerful one.
That's going on Instagram, mate.
So watch your expectations. And that's not just for meditation, but that's sound advice for all of our life, I think.
No, that's quality, mate. That is expectations, foundation of failure. I like that. So just quickly, something that you brought up then as well, I found this a few times when meditating, and people that give it a go after listening to this might find it as well, is sometimes you can peel back a few layers and uncover things that you might have potentially pushed to the very back of your mind that you might not quite realize are there. And meditation can shine a light on those things. And you think, ooh, maybe I do need to address that at some point, and instead of pretending it's not there. So is that something as well that you've experienced with sort of the students that you've taught and things?
Yeah, absolutely. We are, as my teacher likes to call it, dredging the psyche. You know, we are plumbing the depths of the mind. When we do relax and let it be calm, things are bound to come up. Some things are pleasant. You know, they're called nyam in Tibetan, which just means a meditative experience. And sometimes it can be pleasant, a feeling of swaying, or you experience lights, or, you know, something like that. And sometimes, yeah, emotion comes up, or memory comes up, something that needs, wants attention, something that, you know, is coming up and saying, you need to pay attention to me. And again, another thing to say is that is normal. It's your psyche that's coming up. Sometimes I've heard people say, well, meditation can be dangerous, but meditation isn't dangerous in the sense that it doesn't create anything. It didn't create a negative emotion. It didn't create a negative memory. It might shine light on it that was hidden, but it's your own mind. And especially if it comes up in meditation, it might be something that is actually leaking into other parts of your life and you don't realize. You know, we might get angry on the surface with our job and not realize that actually underneath that there is a feeling of low self-esteem, or there's something about ourselves that we don't like, and it's actually manifesting in a way of us getting angry at other things. So when it does happen, I would say don't panic. Don't feel like, you know, meditation's doing this bad thing to me. I shouldn't bring light to this. Don't bury it. Don't run away from it. And we often do that with our emotions. We either, you know, classic male, I don't feel, you know, this negative emotion and just push it down. It doesn't exist. Yeah. Or we run away from it, you know, alcohol, music, distract ourselves, you know, games, whatever it needs to be, just to completely distract ourselves and get away from it. That doesn't get rid of the emotion. It's still there. It still wants listening to. So I would always say, don't panic and give it the space that it needs. Just be aware of it. You'll notice all emotions have a physical counterpart as well. So we often notice like anxiety or anger in the chest. It might be in the stomach. All emotions have a physical counterpart. So it can often just help to just be aware of how it feels in the body. Be aware of that emotion itself. What is it trying to tell you? There might be a story underneath it. Just listen. Just listen, see what comes up, and don't be afraid of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And just building on what you said then, like it's getting harder and harder, man, these days to not just completely throw yourself into a distraction, because like this thing, like as we all know, like the smartest people in the world are working for these social media companies to figure out how they can keep us on those apps for longer and longer. And they are some clever people, man, because, you know, sometimes you just find yourself, you know, so much time has gone by and you just sort of like, I call it like zombie scrolling, you know, you just hooked in and just scrolling through. And sometimes I can find that if I have to maybe, you know, potentially do a task, or even if I'm experiencing an emotion that I don't want to feel, if I'm feeling a bit anxious, rather than dealing with that emotion head on and, like you say, feeling it in the body and maybe undressing it and figuring out what's going on, sometimes it's just easy to just reach out, pick up my phone and just open up Instagram and not have to think about it for another 10 minutes. And I'm just finding that as we progress more and more with technology, it's becoming harder and harder to get away from doing that. So, like, I've started putting my phone in the kitchen cupboard throughout the day for like hours at a time. And it's funny because I'll be working away on my laptop or whatever, and like I'll go to like grab it and there's nothing there, and I'll be like, wow. Like that just automatic response is so like deeply embedded like within me. I guess maybe it's either a longing for distraction or just like a habit at the same time, but it's becoming harder and harder to not just immerse yourself in some kind of distraction. Like you say, it could be alcohol, going out, Netflix, your phone, playing games on a console. It's just left, right, and center. And
absolutely,
I'm not necessarily saying there's anything like wrong with these things, but I think that if you're using them as a means to escape maybe the way that you're feeling within yourself, then perhaps it's not the healthiest way of dealing with it.
Yeah. And they're temporary, you know, like you say, it just puts it off until later, and phone and social media is a real plague, you know, on our society nowadays, and it's probably only going to get worse. And it is really refreshing to turn your phone off or leave it in a kitchen cupboard. It feels very pleasant, doesn't it, just to give yourself that break.
Absolutely.
And it's so important. And I think, you know, from my own small experience, I'm a much happier, more positive, peaceful, relaxed person since I started looking inwards to the causes of my issues. I'm happier not because my external world has changed. The world is just as troubled as ever. You know, I described when I became, when I fell into depression, how shit everything looked. The world is just as troubled as ever. Things still go wrong in my life, but my internal world has changed. And part of this is we no longer look to the things outside of us as true causes of happiness or unhappiness. We don't look outside of ourselves and think, well, that's going to make me happy. That's going to solve this. That's going to, you know, do that. I know from experience that happiness and unhappiness are internal things. And so I know that I don't need to have a perfect job, the perfect car, the perfect this or that, but there is no such thing as perfect that anyway. Because we often think that, you know, happiness will just be around the corner, or when I have this job or when I have that, then I'll be good, then I'll be sorted. And that's what our society does. You know, you go to university, you know, wife and kids, and you do this and that. And it's kind of like pushing in that direction. But we see that actually in this world, some people, some of the most unhappy people have the most and are the most successful. And in fact, the richest in our world are shooting themselves off to space because they're still unhappy. They're trying to find, you know, some happiness and comfort. And yet some people with the least in our world can be some of the happiest. So part of it is recognizing that these things, whatever I turn to, whatever I look at to try and get rid of that ill feeling in my mind, it's not going to last. And it's also it's not the true cause of happiness or unhappiness anyway. And, you know, just from my small practice, I have more peace of mind and ability to remain calm and feel better in myself. Anybody can do that. You know, anybody can do that. You don't need to be away in the caves. You don't need to meditate for 12 hours a day either. We just need to take some of this to heart and shift our outlook a little bit. Yeah. Our way of being and thinking can just change dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely. Just building on something you said there, I'm really trying to remember this story in my mind. So I'm going to try and piece together what it was. I heard it somewhere the other day and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Just kind of going back to what you were saying about how, you know, it's very much deeply embedded in our thinking that more and then more and then more and then more. And it's like, I will become happy when X, Y, and Z happens. And then it happens. And you're like, okay, well, when X, Y, and Z and Z happens, I'll be happy, and so on and so forth. And I listened, I can't remember what the podcast was. If anyone knows who's listening, comment down below. But they talk about a story where these two men, they sort of go into this like billionaire's house party, and they're walking around. There's incredible art on the wall and stuff, and all these expensive pieces of furniture and whatever. And one of them turns around to the other one, and he's like, you'll never be as rich as this man. You know, he made 10 times what we made last week. And he said, no, I am. I'm richer in my mind because I know what enough is. And that, like, we're getting a bit philosophical here, mate, but that like really struck a chord in me, because I was like, you know, if you can figure out a way to define what enough is for you without, you know, taking in all the additional noise that society sort of drills into you, you know, flash car, particular amount of money that you might pay for clothes and things like that.
Yeah.
And kind of really drill it down to, like, in its purest form, what will bring you satisfaction and happiness. Like, I think that we can all find what our sort of enough is with relative ease.
Yeah, absolutely. And recognizing that, like you said, there's nothing wrong with those things, the flashy car, the money, the house and all that kind of stuff. There is nothing wrong with those things. The only thing is they're just limited in our ability to make us happy long term and fulfilled. And in fact, what you know, our experience tells us that first of all, but there's some research that's been done that shows that over the last 50 years, technically, wealth per person has gone up. But in terms of anxiety and mental health problems, that's also gone up.
Oh, yeah, substantially.
And what research shows us is that there's actually a ceiling to how much happiness you can get from things. And that is, you do absolutely need to have enough money to be comfortable. You need to have a roof over your head. Otherwise, of course, you can tell somebody who's living in a war zone to meditate and they'll tell you to shove it. You know, you need to have a certain amount of things. But what research shows is you don't get twice as happy from having twice as many homes. You don't get 10 times as happy from having 10 times as much food or money or anything else. That there's a certain ceiling that once you have enough to be comfortable, you can spend time with friends, you have some freedom in life, you're safe, all of that kind of stuff, you're not going to get anything more from extra stuff in terms of your you know, how you report your well-being and your overall happiness. You're still going to experience stress, frustration, jealousy, everything else. So there is value in external things, but we need to recognize that once we hit a certain point, then it needs to be more about, like you said, recognizing what's enough and cultivating, you know, in our mind, that sense of fulfillment and satisfaction and just being happy with who we are in the world, that we're not doing anything bad, but we're, you know, living a life of nonviolence, we're helping, that we have, you know, mental balance. These are the qualities that are going to bring us more well-being.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couple of other things I just wanted to ask you kind of before we wrap up and stuff. Just a few things that I jotted down that I thought people might be curious to know, kind of the ins and outs of meditation. So like, is there any particular time of day you'd recommend meditating?
So that is, that's one of those things to experiment with. A lot of people do prefer meditating in the morning because you have already slept, you're quite well rested. So, you know, after a shower or splashing some water on your face just to wake yourself up, you're probably not going to have the issue of sleepiness. So one barrier out of the way, and people, you know, find that quite helpful. For other people, morning is just too chaotic and they can't do it. There's too much to organize and they find the evening better. So it's one of those things to experiment with. But one thing I will say is if you want to build a habit, same time every day is going to be the best thing to cultivate that habit and make sure that you keep using it.
Yeah, that, to be fair, that leads me on to our next question, really, is this is both a personal question from me and maybe a question that might be on people's minds who are listening, but like, what's your best advice for building a habit out of it? Because it's sometimes I approach it in a similar way. Like we all, you know, sometimes we all look at exercise, right? And it seems like a great idea the night before, you know, you plan out what you're going to do and you wake up and you think, oh, like maybe your ego gets the better of you. Like there's just this pull on your mind that's just, I mean, look, I've never done an exercise session or a meditation session that I've regretted in my life. Like it's always a great feeling after it, but trying sometimes to, you know, convince myself to get out of bed 20 minutes early and meditate for those 20 minutes, as opposed to turn my phone off airplane mode and see what messages I've got through the night and in the morning, it can be a bit of an internal battle sometimes. And then sometimes I will just end up, you know, maybe sitting on my phone for 20 minutes, messaging, and then it's like, oh, you know, I've got to get start work now. And that's my window missed. So any tips and advice that you've got for overcoming that barrier, other than maybe just giving yourself a kick up the arse?
Yeah, I mean, such a good question. And kick up the arse is the first thing. And, you know, discipline, we need to be disciplined. Yeah. But first of all, it's figuring out why. Why does that happen? Why is it easier? And the answer is that it is easier. It's a path of least resistance. You know, the neural pathway is very much created and strong. It is easier for us to sit in bed and do, you know, whatever we normally do, or to watch this or do that, scroll on our phone. The same thing, like you said, with going to the gym, we will convince ourselves that in innumerable ways that we don't need to go and why we don't need to go and everything else. So the first thing is that it's habit, and that's why we're doing it. The second part is that we're not valuing it. We don't think it's important enough. The way we look at it, we look at, I know for myself, I look at the gym as 20 minutes, if it's 20 minutes on a treadmill, as 20 minutes of pain. And that's what I think of it as not enjoyable sort of time for me. And maybe we think of meditation as sort of a boring 15 minutes of doing nothing. We don't see its value. We see it as a standalone thing. And what we see is we don't see how it fits in to the rest of our life and where we want to be and who we want to be. If you make it important enough, if you connect it to your highest aspirations for who you want to be and where you want to go, then it becomes something like, well, I have to do that. So there's somebody who I follow on Instagram. He's called Kerwin Ray. He's an Australian guy. And one of the things he talks about is his 50 reasons why. And it's really connecting your, you know, doing something like a meeting or study or meditating or going to the gym with your reason why you want to be here and why you want to do what you want to do. And so right now we're seeing this thing as sort of a standalone activity of 15 minutes of something that isn't that pleasant. But if you connect it with, well, if I do that, then it means that I have a calmer mind later on, which means that I can maintain calm and clarity when I'm going to be in that meeting, because that meeting's important to me because of my job, because I need financial security. You know what I mean? So you connect these 50 reasons why to the life you want to live. Then if you do that often enough, the thought of meditating for 15 minutes I need to.
Yeah.
And you've created that new pathway in your mind, and it's no longer the pathway of least resistance, but it's a pathway of importance of, you know, I need to do this. So that's one element. And then the second element, as we started, is you need to give yourself a kick up the ass. You need discipline. If it's important to you and you want to do it, then you need to say to yourself, look, I need to do this. And you need to make sure you get yourself out. You need to move before the mind is starting to convince you otherwise. There's somebody I've heard who's taught a 5-4-3-2-1 technique. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Oh, Mel Robbins.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. So just trying to give yourself that break before you convince yourself of doing something different. Just discipline. You need to get yourself into gear to do it.
Yeah. No, I really like that 50 reasons why analogy, because that's really struck a chord with me, because that can be applicable to so many different areas of life. Again, if I'm sat there and I can feel resistance in my mind stopping me from going on a run, if I can connect, well, actually think how incredible you're going to feel, you know, once Sunday comes and you can look back on the week and you can say, yes, on Tuesday, I got my run in, and then Wednesday, whatever, Thursday, Friday, connecting with kind of the aftermath of it all. And the same with meditation. It's like, you know, no, I want to become a calmer individual who can approach situations in a calm way, and leading with that rather than just seeing it for what it is, which is 15 minutes of, you know, a particular task.
Yeah,
nice. Well, look, mate, you've been amazing. I think we've covered some really good ground there. A few tangents along the way, but look, I mean, this was my first experience kind of having a guest on. So I think it's safe to say it's been a really good episode.
Great.
Do you want to tell the listeners how they can sort of get in touch with you, how they can find out more about you?
Yeah, sure. As you said, if anybody wants to explore meditation a bit more, they're very welcome to come along to anything that I'm hosting. I'm always happy to help people build a practice or work through some of your problems if you're struggling with your meditation practice. So the easiest way would be through our website. You can find everything there. So that's samadhi.org.uk. We'll probably spell that and put that down, in the description.
Yeah, I'll throw it in the YouTube description.
Yeah, samadhi.org.uk. We do weekly classes online. There's a free class every Sunday that you're welcome to just drop into. It's a brief meditation and a bit of a discussion. There's retreats, there's all sorts, there's podcasts, loads of videos on there. So that would be the best way of finding out what we're doing.
Amazing. And what was your Instagram handle again?
It's samadhi_meditation.
Amazing. I mean, I'll be tagging you left, right, and center, mate, with all of these incredible quotes that you've been spilling out throughout the podcast. So I'm sure people will be able to find you quite easily. But yeah, look, thank you very much for your time today, David. I really appreciate it, mate. All right. I'll chat to you soon. Okay. So that is the end of the episode. I hope that you got some value from it. If you did find that you got some value from it, please do me a favor, share the love. If you could like it, if you're watching the video on YouTube, and subscribe to my channel. If you're listening on any other streaming platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anything like that, then just do me a favor, give it a rating. Not saying it has to be 5 stars, but might help. And subscribe to my channel on there, because the reason I ask for these things is it gives the algorithm on those particular platforms just a little kick up the arse, and it will allow the video to get exposed to more people, or the podcast to get exposed to more people. And if you found some value in the episode, then there's probably a good chance that other people are going to find some value in it as well. So yeah, if you could do any of those things for me, that would be massively appreciated. Before I let you go, I just want to play you a little snippet of my debut song that is coming out. Season deepens and it all decays. I seek freedom, leaving from my inner chains. As the months pass, I think of old times. I put a pause on my thoughts and I look behind. Like, where did every other summer go? And remember when the days never had a low. Pick a mix, feeling bliss with a couple quid. Bluetooth in tunes with all the other kids. Okay, so the song is called Life's Pace, and as you can probably guess from the lyrics that you've just heard, it's really just about sort of, well, dealing with the fact that I'm a young man in his 20s, and just at various points throughout my 20s have felt pretty lost, if I'm honest with you. And that song is kind of an expression of that feeling for me. So I've mentioned before, you know, like I use music as a bit of a, it's almost a form of therapy for me. It's just a nice creative outlet that helps me deal with any shit that's going on inside my head. So look, if it sounds like something that's up your street, you can access the pre-save link in my Instagram bio. If you're listening after February the 2nd, 2022, you can find the song by searching Life's Pace, Mike Wells on Spotify, and you'll be able to stream it on there and listen to the full thing. So look, thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Like I said, if you could share the love, that would be much appreciated as well. And I will see you in the next one.